It was the experience of the consciousness of God, pure light, unspeakable love and peace. And permeating that spot were millions of voices joining as one, singing a melody too sweet to recall. And the refrain was, "We are all one in spirit." Knowing her time was near, I came to Denver yesterday to see her to the other side. Last night while saying prayers, she emerged from the coma, and with a look of great joy on her face, opened her eyes. I told her all was ready. I could hear her acknowledge these words, and a large tear welled up in her eyes as she knew that our time together in this world was nearly over. This morning, we were called to her bedside. As we gathered, we said prayers and prepared her spiritually for the transition. As lights and a great spirit filled the room, we said it was time, and I said, "Shari, go into the eternal light." With that, she took her final breath and ascended, head to providence. Even while knowing the joy and love of her present state, the loss is nonetheless severe, but let us remember her thus: she lived in the world of light, joyous, and she would want us to continue the work to which she dedicated her life, the establishment of universal peace, and the creation of a cosmic civilization. And we find hope in the knowledge that those who have passed on to the next world become the leaven which raises this world of existence. Shari and I discussed her future work, from beyond the veil of light, which would advance the cause of peace and enlightenment in all the realms of God. I have no doubt that she will serve well from her new home in the eternal and become one with the angels of peace. Without peace, there can be no progress on the earth. So let us work for peace with hearts filled with love. For when we pass from this world, all we really take with us is love, endless, infinite love. The night of her passing, after writing her tribute, I went into a very deep sleep and had an extraordinary experience with an ET. I awakened into a lucid dream with an extraterrestrial who we now call Kindness, who was being introduced to me by Shari. She was an ET that was so evolved that she could communicate with both Shari in her astral light body and me simultaneously. This being, a female extraterrestrial, had a perfectly round head, no hair, and really exotic, beautiful eyes and a very beautiful face. She was very slender and fine, featured. As we connected with each other, she exuded the most extraordinary kindness. She was the embodiment of perfect kindness, very kind, very loving. As I was talking to her, at some point I asked, "Do we have your permission now to do this disclosure of the truth ourselves?" "The president has failed to act, the international community has failed to act, and the Congress has been intimidated or is frightened or corrupt." Kindness said, "Yes, if you can, do it. If you can, do it." And so, it was green-lighted by this very senior ET ambassador. So from 98 on, we put together the plans for the 2001 disclosure, knowing that it was approved by this extraterrestrial the night after Shari passed away. And this after the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff had said something very similar. Interestingly, in this same lucid dream, I was with Bill Clinton and we were having a discussion about this. And with a very sardonic smile, he said, "Well, I can't do this, but you can." And, of course, what he was saying is that I won't do it because it's too dangerous, but why don't you? John McCain is right when he says that courage is the indispensable quality for real leadership. We always felt that this work was being assisted by Shari, and it turns out that at nearly every contact expedition since 1998, the extraterrestrial who I call Kindness, has appeared in a beautiful blue, white ship. Often it will zip into the sky, make an arc and flash the group, shining a blue, white light on all of us. I know it is this senior spiritual and politi, Cal ambassador of the extraterrestrial coalition that has been connected to us since 1998. Before that, my main ET contact was a male ET that had jet black hair with very Caucasian features, intense blue eyes, and the whitest skin I've ever seen. He is the ET that contacted me in 1990, when I started XETI and all these projects. Kindness spacecraft has been seen more than once right over our house in Virginia. Our neighbors have seen an intense blue ship, that is not quite fully materialized, actually enveloping and hovering over the house at 4:30 in the morning. One neighbor had no idea I was involved in these projects at the time. But when she looked at this cobalt blue disc right on our house, what she felt was incredible peace and protection. After Shari passed, I was emotionally spent for a while. I felt responsible, and had survivor's guilt. The children knew I was sad, so they gave me a videotape of the bird cage that Christmas. I watched it and watched it and watched it. I needed laughter therapy, because not only did I have cancer, but then I was also now very sad because my closest friend had died. Frankly, she had been murdered. I have met all kinds of celebrities and rock stars and CIA directors and senators. But the only person in the whole world I care to meet is Nathan Lane, Miss Albert in the bird cage. I would love to spend some time with him and tell him, "You saved my life with this movie, because I laughed my way back to health." After Shari passed on to the other side, we went to Hawaii in February of 1998, and were with Joan Ocean on the Big Island. We did the extraterrestrial contact training program there and had a very positive experience. For me, it was really needed, because I was devastated by Shari's passing and by a lot of the other things that were happening. One night we saw in the field a scintillating, electric blue craft. It was not quite fully materialized, but it was clearly visible and a beautiful disc of cobalt blue light. It was kindness, the ET I met the night Shari passed over. At the end of the training, we went out to swim with the spinner dolphins, under the guidance of Joan Ocean, who is an expert in dolphin contact. The spinner dolphins jump out of the water and corkscrew spin and then go back in, they're so very playful. After much searching, we arrived at an area where there were spinner dolphins nearby. I got in the water with Linda Willits, my partner who was swimming with me. I went into a state of expanded, relaxed awareness and a group of four dolphins came over. I stayed in a very innocent, child-like state where one is just awake, but without expectation or force, just being. It is a very zen, like state of consciousness and deeply peaceful. Then suddenly these four dolphins approached and adopted me into their little pod. The four dolphins and I made a star formation. There was one ahead of me, one on my right flank, one on my left flank, and one beneath me, just exactly as though we were planes flying together in formation. I was close enough that I could see their eyes and touch them, if I had wanted to. We looked into each other's eyes with a very deep knowing and playfulness. I swam away with them, but when I could not keep up, they would slow down for me. They would take me down and dive, but I couldn't stay down as long as they could, so I'd come up. And as I would come up, they'd come up in unison with me. We were heading right out into the open ocean. The boat was getting smaller and smaller in the distance, and Linda could not keep up. So for safety reasons, I had to turn around, but they were taking me out to their special area out in the ocean. It was a beautiful experience and a very peaceful communing with these intelligent beings in their element. This is a good way to train for being with the ETs. We enter the same non-forceful, innocent and playful state of cosmic mind. It's like the elusive butterfly, you have to be in a certain state of mind, and when they are comfortable with you, they will come. You must be completely one with their consciousness. I find that this is a wonderful practice to do with dogs and other animals. We can have a very special, mystical connection to animals. At the end of this trip to Hawaii, on a moonlit night, we went hiking where the lava from the big erupting volcano plunges into the ocean. Near a welcome station, a brilliant strobe light, blue, white in color, simply appeared within a few feet of us. When we got back to the vehicle, the lights were on and the doors were unlocked and all the electronics were changed within the car. We eventually were flashed twice by a distant object. This has happened thousands of times over the last 15 years. In Joshua Tree, on a subsequent event, we were at that site where the craft had entered the Earth. Suddenly, we began to see these unusual lights flashing on and off in space. They didn't move and it wasn't a satellite, it was just a light that went on and off. Well, at one point, The whole group was suffused in this unusual light, a subtle, silvery light. Everyone noticed it. It was like we were in a cone of light, and it was very silent and peaceful. This continued for around a half hour. And then as quickly as you would snap your finger, it vanished and everything became pitch black again. On one of the expeditions to Crystone, Colorado, we were doing a protocol to create a protective dome around the group. Suddenly we had a really wonderful sighting of Kindness bluish, white ship. It came in and made an arc and then went back out into space. As we were doing this, we sensed that there was a huge craft that had settled around us. It was completely silent and only partly materialized. But the air around us suddenly got warmer and you could see a distinct glowing form all around us. Many people saw ET beings moving around us, again almost ghost-like, not quite fully in this material dimension. We saw a golden craft with a red light going around the outside of it. In the distance, a spectacular electrical storm was occurring. Well, it turns out that there was a cook and other staff who worked at a little motel called the White Eagle, near Crystone. They had gone out for a break, and were looking over towards the barca where we were located. They didn't even know what Xeti was or what we were doing. But as they looked over towards where we were located, they saw a glowing dome, like a ship, with red lights going around the base of it, counterclockwise. They were absolutely shocked. And they said they could even see through other objects to see it. The farmhouse that was directly in the way was not visible to them. Of course, the next day, they reported this to us. They were absolutely stunned when they heard that we were exactly at that location of the craft and what we were experiencing. I understand they ended up leaving the valley because they were utterly unnerved by this experience. After this craft moved away, the temperature, within moments, dropped 10 to 15 degrees. It was like we were in a building and then the building was gone. She shared with me, when she first met Werner von Braun, he was very sick and she was asked by him to give a talk on his behalf at a big gathering of aerospace people in Chicago. She felt very unprepared for this, but he said, "You'll be fine, don't worry, just go." So, she went and had no idea what she was going to say to all these thousands of people. As she began her talk, suddenly she heard Werner von Braun's voice speaking to her. In her ear, she did not have any kind of implant or any kind of electronic device in her. She gave the talk from listening to Werner von Braun speaking to her in her ear and gave the entire talk that way. That's when she realized just how advanced these systems are. You do not have to have a specific device in anyone when using the really advanced non-local electromagnetic systems developed by this rogue group. Of course, one of the things that has been done in terms of controlling behavior and inducing memory are the so-called implants that people have taken out of alleged abduction victims. These are manufactured by covert high-end electronics firms and are then implanted into people through hoaxed abductions. These abductees are then directed to specific unwitting, or compromised, abduction researchers, who then claim ETs did it. What a travesty. Since they have no idea what the covert human capabilities are, such researchers claim only ETs could have done it. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you don't know what the human covert capabilities are, there is no way you can judge what it is that you're observing, whether or not it is of human or extraterrestrial origin. After 50 or 60 years and trillions of dollars in covert expenditures, working with some of the most brilliant minds in the world, some really amazing advances have occurred in the covert world. I'm certain that the state of art is extremely advanced and is, in some respects, approaching parity with some of the extraterrestrial capabilities. Also, we have noted that many abductions are clustered near military facilities or within military families. I learned from some of the people who were looking into this back in the 70s and 80s that they had found a very strong correlation with military families and personnel and military areas. This was reported to some of the civilian UFO groups, but the people trying to get that information out were blacklisted from every meeting and were not allowed to talk about it. It was whitewashed and covered up. Makes you wonder who is running these UFO and abduction groups. In fact, The executive director of one of these civilian abduction groups called me and said he had heard that I had reached this conclusion, that I was absolutely correct and that there were a large number of their cases that he knew were military abductions. But, this fact was being covered up by the founder of this group, and anyone who tried to bring this information out or tried to talk about a positive interaction with extraterrestrials was summarily removed. It turns out this prominent UFO abduction group had dominant funding from Princess A. This is the kind of thing that goes on routinely. And this is why my concern has always been the truth and wherever the truth leads us. Unfortunately, there are some people who have so much of their reputation and belief system wrapped up in these ideas that they won't let the truth out. Back in the 80s, there was a researcher named Paul Benowitz, an officer in the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, FOC, was involved in such a case. A military abductee was directed to Paul Benowitz for the purpose of causing him to go off track on an investigation regarding super-secret projects around Kirkland Air Force Base in New Mexico. A woman, late at night, was driving near one of these secret facilities where they were testing an anti-gravity vehicle. She saw something she was not supposed to see, so a military abduction sequence was initiated. They gave her a chemical, she lost consciousness, and then they implanted her. Using advanced MK Ultra type techniques, these covert operatives then gave her screen memories of an ET abduction sequence. She was then directed, through these people, to Paul Benowitz and they started targeting him with some of these electromagnetic weapons systems. He subsequently had a serious nervous breakdown and had to be hospitalized. It was a huge tragedy. This all happened because this hapless person saw something she wasn't supposed to see. The cover story was an extraterrestrial abduction, when, in reality, what she had seen was a testing of an alien reproduction vehicle near Kirkland AFB. Some people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and rather than let it out that secret human projects have anti-gravity propulsion systems, a hoaxed ET abduction occurs as a convenient cover story. During the course of our investigations in the 90s, we identified a few people who have been on these squads. One is a man outside Seattle, Washington, and another one is in Colorado, who was an Army Ranger and had been pulled into one of these compartmented programs. He said that it was the practice of stagecraft. You were only sent on an abduction once, and then they separated you. I've asked him to come forward publicly, but he's terrified and he's certain that he'll be assassinated if he does. He said that they actually had humans directing people who were made to look like extraterrestrials. This stagecraft is very advanced and would fool almost anyone that it really was an ET doing the operation. He said they were using electron, X, as well as drugs, to abduct people. You have no idea how many important political and key military figures have had either themselves or their family members abducted by us so they would learn to hate the extraterrestrials and support the Star Wars effort. I said, yes, I do believe it, I told him, because I met with Princess A, whose brother had been abducted through a covert paramilitary operation so that this powerful banking family would accept there was a threat. These operations are extremely well managed, and very sophisticated at the art of deception. A number of separate, corroborating people who've been in corpo, raid and military intelligence programs have told me the exact same details regarding the modalities that are used and the purpose behind the operations. These hoaxes are perpetrated in other countries, as well. And the purpose is to do exactly what Wernher von Braun had warned about, to prepare people for an eventual false threat from outer space that would unite the world around a new level of centralized military, industrial, economic power. Some people in the media, and certain authors, have been targeted with this type of experience. President Kennedy was assassinated because he got too close to the truth on this and related matters. He's working on the reverse engineering projects and dealing with UFO and flying saucer technology. I've spoken to him a number of times, and I know for a fact that the assassination of Jack Kennedy and the deaths of many people have been attributed to trying to stop leaks on this issue. When I met with Lord Hill Norton, in England, a 5, Star Admiral, Sea Lord and former Mod Head, he wanted to know why he was never told anything about UFOs. He had heard that I had met with the CIA director and was briefing Clinton's people. I went to his home in Hampshire. It was one of these grand old houses with the thick, thatched roofs, a beautiful place. We sat in his living room in a couple of wing chairs. He was on my right side and had a little pad of paper and was asking me questions, taking notes fastidiously. He wanted to know everything I knew. Lord Hill, Norton was an intense, short man with piercing blue eyes. At one point, he asked me, why would they not tell me about this? I was head of the Ministry of Defense, and I was also head of ME, 5 and ME, 6 and all the other sensitive operations in the UK. Plus, I was head of the Military Committee for NATO. Yet I never knew about this when I was in those positions. I only learned about it later, and I found out about it from people like Lord Mountbatten. Why wouldn't they tell me? He was outraged that he was out of the loop, just like Admiral Tom Wilson, who was head of Intelligence Joint Staff, and just like CIA Director James Woolsey, and on and on and on. I said, well, sir, let me answer your question with a question. What would you have done if you had found out that there was a trans-nation, AL group that answered to no government in the world but had infiltrated almost every aspect of every government of any significance in the world, that had arrogated to itself, through a criminal enterprise and ruthless behavior, including murder and assassinations, illegal control of the most important technologies ever discovered, including technologies capable of interstellar travel, technologies that could take the whole world off the need for fossil fuels, save the environment, and end poverty in the world, and that this group had utter contempt for the rule of law and for democracy and for the freedoms and welfare of the people, or even for the future of Earth. What would you have done? He exclaimed, I wouldn't have stood for it for one bloody moment. I said, and that's why they never told you. You've just answered your own question. He asked, well, what do you mean? I said, because if you had known, and this would have been your response, you would have ended up like Jack Kennedy or like Lord Mountbatten, blown up by an alleged IRA bomb that was actually set by this rogue group, and you would have ended up like Marilyn Monroe and Mary Meyer and all these other people, who were killed for not going along with the secrecy. You would have ended up like all the rest of them. Then I added, and like, unfortunately, some of my group, like former CIA director, Bill Colby. He just looked at me. He then muttered something to effect of, those bastards. Whether you know or whether you don't know is dependent completely on whether or not those in this shadowy, covered world think you will go along with whatever amount of secret information you would be exposed to. And if they think you're a stand-up guy, who, as soon as you find out how valuable the information is and also how criminal the enterprise is that's doing this, would try to fix it, they won't give you this information, because if they do and you step out of line, they're going to have to eliminate you. My military advisor has been in such unacknowledged special access projects and has described to me how they work. If there are 10 people in that project and it's an unacknowledged project, only those 10 people know what's going on in it. And if you're in that group and you step out of line, he told me that there is a bullet with your name on it, and it'll find you. And if you are not in that cell, no matter what your rank and position, you will never know it exists. One of these projects was headed up by Admiral Harry Tran, who later went to SAIC. At a certain point when they were going to close that project so it could morph and turn up at another place, just to keep the shell game going, this admiral gathered all the men together and said, thank you very much for your services. You have been in an X-billion-dollar, unacknowledged project, but now it is time for it to change its form. And they shut it down. I am working with many men who've been in these kinds of projects. One of our witnesses is Merle Shane McDowell. He had been at Atlantic Command near Norfolk, Virginia, when an enormous UFO came in out of space, off the northeastern seaboard, and was eventually tracked on at least 5 different military radar stations. It was tracked going up and down the east coast. The control center where he was located went to what's called a full code zebra alert. You have to have zebra stripes on your badge to stay in that facility when they are at this highest stage of alert. Anyone without zebra stripes who isn't out of the command within 60 seconds will be shot by Marines stationed there. Admiral Harry Tran was the SINC, the commander, in chief, Atlantic Command, when this happened. Merle Shane McDowell told me that the Admiral was really upset because this event was out of his control. The Admiral then ordered the downing of this extraterrestrial vehicle and scrambled jets all up and down the eastern seaboard, trying to intercept it. But in one sweep of the radar scope, it would move from off the coast of New England to off the coast of Florida, and then one more sweep and the UFO would be off the coast of Norfolk. Eventually, it went out over the Azores. At one point they did get a pilot close enough to it to photograph it. And McDowell saw the photograph of this very large, long, cylindrical, shaped craft. Over the Azores, it turned about 60 degrees and went straight out into space, instantly. In the early 1980s, Admiral Tran was apparently not in the loop on the UFO matter, because McDowell says, the old man was really shaken. He didn't know what this thing was. They were on a hotline to the Soviet Union, trying to find out if it was a missile or something of theirs. And the Soviets said, it's not ours. It was nothing European. It was not American. Later, spooks in suits came in and threatened everyone who had been part of this encounter. And the threats were serious. One of the reasons I brief many mainstream military commanders about this issue is that those who do not know about the subject could stumble into a similar encounter like this and not know how to respond. Operational readiness is being undermined by secrecy, by this parallel rogue group who did know, but who wouldn't tell people. Remember, Admiral Tran ordered a military encounter and downing of an ET craft because, at that time, he did not know what it was. This is extremely dangerous and ill-advised. After Tran left the military, he went through the revolving door of the military-industrial complex and to the crown jewel of the secret shadow government, Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC. Our military advisor had the opportunity a few years ago to meet with Admiral Tran, and to bring up this issue. Admiral Tran listened but became very silent and said, I am profoundly disinterested in discussing this matter. He then picked up literally the last word of what was being discussed prior to the UFO subject being brought up and continued on, seamlessly. These people are trained to do this. I have a very dear friend who introduced me to Mrs. Boutros Ghali, the wife of the Secretary General of the UN, and a number of other people. She has been a long time supporter and member of XETI and the Disclosure Project. She also has been friends for years with a very senior senator. I tipped her off that I was pretty certain he was one of the key operatives in this secret rogue group. So, she brought this matter up to him. And he did the full, lowing, he listened, looking at her with these intense, eagle-like eyes. When she finished speaking, he brought up the last word of what was said prior to her mentioning UFOs and seamlessly continued the conversation. He just snipped the UFO part of it out, as if it was never discussed. She said it was really amazing. I, too, have seen this happen with people. This is one way I've been able to identify the really well-trained, senior people in the shadow government group. A former US president and two former secretaries of defense are very deeply involved. In the mid-90s, I was invited by someone who knew Senator Barry Goldwater to discuss this at his home. Many of you may remember he was the senator from Arizona who ran for president in the 1964 election and lost. And he was also a general in the Air Force Reserves. I went to Sen. Goldwater's home near Scottsdale, as which was up on a hill overlooking the city. The senator was in his 80s, but quite sharp. He was very interested in what we were doing. We had sent all of our briefing materials to him and he was very grateful. He told me this story, back in the 60s he was very close friends with General Curtis Leem, you know, bomb them back to the Stone Age Leem. Senator Goldwater, being in the Air Force and a pilot, had heard UFO reports from very credible people that he had known. He had also heard that some of the material retrieved from a crashed UFO in New Mexico had ended up at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.